You are listening to a production of the Toll Network, home of biting analysis. This is Uncommon Cast RX 150, Sage Rage.
I'm Aleph, the thesis-seeking critic. Dwight Red.
I'm Amit, the heart-snacking critic. Dwight Pink.
And I'm Sono, the pleasantly surprised critic. Dwight Green.
Putting heroes on trial. Critical Squadron, Duat Ranger.
Oh my god, they're canceling the new camera reboot? No, damn it. I just read it from the...
That's an introduction.
I just read that from the timeline, literally. Just like, the first thing I saw from my Twitter was like, camera reboot canceled. News.
Camera, we're doing a show here.
I mean... It's so cool relevant.
It's so cool relevant.
It was gonna be have Takadera on it, you know, the Kuga producer. So it's Kamen Rider related.
See, now, you just had to.
That's
me, right?
Arsenian. Okay, folks, join us as we take a critical eye to Kamen Rider Ghost. Will Takeru save himself and the Kamen Rider franchise in the 18 days he has left on this blue planet? Find out how we think he's doing as we pass judgment on Kamen Rider Ghost 41, Shockwave, the Magistrate's Decision, and Kamen Rider Ghost 42, Astonishment, the Truth About the Sage.
Our writer for both of these was Hasegawa Keiichi. Our director was Yamaguchi Kyohei. Before we jump in, I do just want to give a little bit of a shout-out to everyone who was at the Tokusatsu meetup last weekend at the time that we're recording this at Otakon 2016. We had a great little meetup. It was a lot of fun. Great cosplay photo shoot, and I just want to thank all of y'all who showed up to that, because it was a really great time.
Very nice.
And I didn't show up in it, because I live in Finland.
So let's move right into the focus, then. What messages did you get from these episodes?
Overall, it felt kind of like an It's Always Darkest Before the Dawn sort of thing. Like, this episode, this whole arc, was mostly a lot of exposition about kind of the nature and the history of Ganma World and society, and how things kind of got to the place that they did. And it's a lot of Edith admitting, like, he made mistakes, and he messed up, and he's afraid. And he's at the root of a lot of problems, and he knows that he doesn't have the means to fix them. So he's just trying to believe that Takeru is going to be able to do it. But there's also Takeru's time is drawing closer to an end, and he and his friends are very worried about that, on top of, you know, Makoto doing more and more damage to himself as he defeats these shadows of himself. And neither of these problems have any real solution that anyone's aware of to work towards. Everyone's just kind of grasping for whatever they can, and, you know, sometimes that's all you can do. And, you know, in that is the reality that all of these people really care about each other, and they want to save each other, and they want to save the world, and they all want to have a hand in protecting one another, and that's what gives them strength. And, you know, on that, let me tell you, it feels real nice to see Kamen Rider tell kids that it's okay and normal and natural to be angry and to feel anger about things and your situation. And you just kind of got to know how to manage your anger and not let it get the best of you, so you end up making mistakes. It's been since Kuga since we saw that, guys. And, you know, it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. And it, you know, gives me some nice warm feelings to see them telling kids, like, no, you can get angry. That's okay. You're allowed to feel things. Especially, you know, backing that up against this week's Laser Knees, because we're a couple episodes behind in Ghost now, but this was up against, you know, Leo yelling at Misao for bottling up his emotions and handling that in the absolute worst way possible.
Just, I mean, it's good. Leo, so...
Yeah, exactly.
And you weren't even there. We destroyed him.
We had some thoughts. A couple notes.
I've not been watching the recent Zoo Olders, but I can definitely already imagine how it all goes down. over there, yeah.
Yeah, and sort of picking up on that, like, I kind of just wish we could get the best of both from Zhuojer and Ghost and just put them into a single series that would just be golden from beginning to end. But I will give this, like, it's pretty rare, especially with Ghost, that Ghost ever stumbles really bad. And if it does, it somehow never seems to stumble on the same week that Zhuojer does, or vice versa, which is nice. But, like, watching these couple episodes, I think what I was coming away with, just being the massive structure nerd that I am, I'm just like, I really enjoyed the way they were paralleling this sense of anger and helplessness going on with Beethoven and Akari, if they're powerless in the face of destiny and death and inevitability and all these other things, which creates this lovely framework for when Edith and Ryu, you know, they come in and they start talking, and it's like, okay, well, now we have a context to understand what happens with them, how they change. And then you have Edith and Ryu being powerless against the things they want to fight, and then they come together to figure a way beyond those things, because we're not so different, you and I. Which, you know, I'm a big fan of when they can play that off in a way that isn't trite nonsense. And they just, it's the thing where, yeah, Ryu just helps Edith see his point of view through the genre-appropriate method of having a quasi-mystical sword fight with him. You know, it's Tokusatsu. That's how stuff gets done. But then you cap that all off with what happens when you let anger rule you, as you turn into this self-important megalomaniac like Adele, who just can't accept that anything is outside of his control. And he's angry about it, but he's not angry about it in a way that is constructive or interesting. He's just angry to the point where he can't even accept the offer of a hand up from someone who just wants to help him out. Just wants to be his friend. Like, it's this lovely two-episode exploration of emotion, and like you were saying, Zono, it's really one of the first ones since Kuga to have any good nuance to it.
Interesting. Now I'm kicking myself that I never finished Kuga when I had the chance.
Well, look, there's Midnight Crew is they're doing a new version of the subs on Blu-ray quality video, and I'm like, gimme. So I think that'll be a lovely time to get back in on it.
Sure.
And there's always the novel.
Right.
I still need to get around reading that. Yeah.
It's some real good stuff.
I've read some excerpts, and it does look really, really nice.
So I don't know. I kind of had a hard time getting my thoughts on this, but I listened to Onari, and I closed my eyes and looked within my heart, and Adele definitely came into focus for me. He's this focal point around which the narrative and cast seem to be revolving right now, and I'm enjoying what they're doing with him. Adele is almost 100% foil at this point. He's going against Adonis's example. He's fighting Elaine, who's listening to Adonis and following his heart. He's ignoring Arya at his peril, and he's power hungry and full of jealous rage towards Takaru, who only has or wants to use his infinite power to protect those dear to him and, you know, save the masses from Adele's destructive fascist agenda, which has left him all alone with only copies of himself as tenuous allies. You know, and Takaru Tenkuji is the key, and he just can't take that. It's a really intense expression of everything Takaru and his friends have overcome over the course of the series, and it's almost funny, or it would almost be funny, like, if I didn't feel so bad for Adele. This young man is lost, and he rejected his only way out, which came from the Miracle Boy beating him. I'm sure Takaru will try to save him again, but it really feels like the message here is a combination of you can't save everyone, but you should try, and be careful that you, or like with what you do, because you won't keep getting second chances in life. And that's an important thing for kids to recognize.
Yeah, there's everybody got limits. Well, it's cool. I can just say I'm sorry and just do it again. Nah.
No.
Not how it works at all. So, Sinan, what came into focus for you? Do you have anything you want to share here particularly?
I think it's... well, this kind of counts into the bone section. But okay, so I was watching this, and I was starting to think, because now that Adele is now really in the forefront as, like, kind of the main... It's pretty much confirmed that he's going to be, like, the main villain by now. Like, Edith and... You know, and Edith and Sage are the same guy, and Sage is basically the dominant sort of personality, and not as Edith, the weird, like, pseudo DJ Sagara entity. Although he could still be that, maybe, but no. I don't know. Probably, most likely not anymore. So, it's kind of this, so, it kind of just brought up one thing that I kind of have a problem with, and that is, Adele is kind of not very interesting. Now, writer villains generally, honestly, aren't all that... Many of them are not that great. Yeah, that's that is kind of true. But I don't know. I feel like with what they're trying to do here, I don't know if I don't really know what makes him sort of tick or why he's the way he is. I don't know what he's supposed to kind of really be outside of, like, some really sort of, like, vague general ideas. Like, I mean, okay, obviously being raised in whatever the whatever hellscape that Ganmo world is obviously not gonna make you turn out nice. But it's like, I don't know, I still kind of wish we had some more concrete explanation as to, like, you know, what is his, like, exact motivations outside of, you know, the general sort of fascist Ganma stuff. Like, you know, why is he, like, the way he is? It's, I don't know, did we, back in, like, 20 or something episodes ago, did we really kind of establish sort of Adele, you know, as concrete, you know, that concretely? Because I don't remember that much.
I personally don't know what show you're watching that, like, you're not...
Maybe it's me not having
this from him, because I feel like they're very blunt with, like, what he's going for and who he is.
Oh, okay, well, but tell me. I probably, like, don't remember
he
it.
He wants to be God. He wants to take what his father did and surpass it. That's the whole
core
of who he is.
Yeah,
I know.
He bought the scientific clockwork universe idea. He just took it to a weird place because he's also a massive egoist.
I guess that's how I know that's kind of how it is.
But how
did
he get
is?
To be the massive egoist? How did... Yeah.
Yeah, how he gets to it.
He believes so much in the idea of the utopia that he's been presented with, and now that utopia is falling apart, and he can't fix it, but he doesn't believe he can't fix it. He won't allow himself to believe he can't fix it, because he's stepped into the position where he should be able to.
I guess that's how it is. But I don't know. I feel like I need something a little bit more concrete. Like, I can see that subtext, but I kind of want it... I don't know. I just personally feel like
at that point, it's, you know, that's... You think what you think there, and... You know, no shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wish there's a little bit more. And especially, like, I want to know how that kind of relates to how, you know, Takeru... as, like, a character, you know, how that tells about him, how that, you know, maybe it's, like, some contrast between the two of them, like, because there's obviously they're kind of trying to make this kind of parallel between the two, so I kind of wish we kind of know a little bit more about Adele, a little bit on what is going on with them, you know?
Look, Ben, no offense, but I honestly, like, I can't grasp where you're coming from on this, where you're, like, they're trying to make a parallel, I'm like, because for me, it's so clear. Like, I can't, I don't want to argue with with you on this because we're coming at it two completely different directions, but I can't grasp on to like how you're seeing this.
I can see that. I can see that too. I understand that. I'm just like, it's just kind of me because I honestly, because this is also coming from because I kind of have this fear that, you know, because we are getting a lot of these, you know, the previews from the movies, like at the end and stuff. And it's, I kind of feel like a lot of the stuff is going to be a lot of the sort of these sort of backstory and characters. It's going to be in the movies because it's going to probably have to do with the brother that we just kind of never knew about until around the movies time frame.
See, so I'm coming at this show with 800% faith. Like, I'm not believing there's nothing there are things that I'm not being told. Like, I can't come at this show negatively.
I want to kind of overall look at this show at the end to see how where it's going on with all of this before making any final judgments myself.
I can't make any final judgments on the show. We've still got like 8 episodes left. Like, I also, Ghost hasn't let me down with anything before. Like, I have to give them the full benefit of the doubt, and I don't feel like anything's being kept from me.
I know. I get. It's probably, I don't know, I feel it's kind of odd, I feel. I don't know, I fear that it's gonna kind of also be like the Gamo situation with like Forze, where we kind of throughout most of the show didn't really know him personally. Like, we didn't really know his backstory or why he did the things he did until, like, the late 40s or something. Where, you know, where we had that brief flashback about, and all the things about, like, what the weird alien progenitor forerunner guys. I don't know what their thing, I don't remember them anymore, what their name is. So it's like, I don't know. I just, a little bit of worry, but then again, honestly, Kamen Rider villains have never honestly been like the most like fleshed out character wise in this sort of conventional sense. Like,
I'll fight you on that too, but that's neither here or there.
Well, okay,
not an argument for today.
Yeah, well, some of them are actually pretty fleshed out characters. I actually thought like. I don't know, I actually thought, like, the main villain in Wizard was actually reasonably pretty interesting. But yeah, I don't know, it's just kind of my thing here, probably. But then again, I can also say that, you know, Great Leader, you know, from the Showa era, you know, he's not exactly the deepest character, but everything kind of what he sort of represents and all that sort of stuff, everything about that is pretty interesting to analyze. So it's like not really a conventional sort of character to look at in that sort of way. I don't know if you guys really get what I'm saying, but you know.
I at least can understand the framework of it, even if in this particular application, I hold a very different perspective.
I want to kind of bring up.
I get where you're coming from, but like I completely disagree.
I kind of aim to deliver sort of different opinions from time to time, kind of different perspectives. If not mine, then maybe someone else's, which is why I kind of read up on sort of the community thoughts whenever I can find some, although most of them have not been helpful because they're basically just like one of those, like, you know, those kind of those post sort of like to episode 30s to 40s, like, rambles that kind of the Toku fandom always gets into. You know, the ones where it's like, ugh, I hope this show is over. I wish the next one begins. And then they kind of excited about the new show for a while until it's like, ugh, I want this show to end. It always happens with Toku fandoms. Almost always. But yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to kind of think about this. I don't know, what else can I really bring up here? Well, I could look... Well, I'm looking at this one forum that I sort of casually follow, and not really giving much to work with here. So, or whatever. You guys can go on until I have more to say.
Okay. Well, on that note then, using you as kind of a lead-in on that one, Cannibal, let's head to our bones and see if what kind of bones we have to pick with these couple episodes of Ghost.
Okay. So are we gonna read Amit's stuff, or what are we doing with that?
Sure. Yeah.
I can read Amit's stuff. Yeah, I can read Amit's stuff because I didn't write really anything for this.
For the listeners, he had to drop out all of a sudden, which is why he was here and now is not.
Just
keeping everyone up to speed.
Okay. Well, there's only one bones from Amit, which is for episode 42, which is that Takuro finally was able to connect with Beethoven. Does that mean he never fully connected with all 15 heroic icons like he was supposed to have already done? Am I reading this wrong?
No.
I don't think it was ever established that he connected with all 15 of them. I guess other than, you know, that time where he's like, but I want to fight with all you guys, let's be best friends. I mean, unless that counts. And I guess at this point it's just, you know, Beethoven wanted to dispense some wisdom because he was angry.
He's so angry. I love him.
Is that famous Beethoven characteristic? He's angry?
Well, it's,
I don't know.
He was, after he started going deaf, it's said that he became a lot more mercurial in his character. Let us say, going from deep pits of melancholia to just straight up getting in people's faces and, like, slapping them around because he's a musician who's losing his hearing, and he's like, this is awful. Which, I mean, let's be real, that's a legit feeling.
Yeah. Mm. So I've only really got bones for 41. Going through 42, I'm sure the episode has its issues, but I just nothing, you know, that I could specifically pick out. But for 41, so Akari and I guess everyone can just see Sage and Yurusen now. I don't know if this is a thing that's been addressed already, but when Akari calls out to him, she doesn't use Spider Lantern to reveal him. Like, can he just, I guess, do this the way that Takuru does, where he can just, you know, be visible to normal people if he wants to, and just hasn't until now? It's just a weird, weird little bit of something there. Also, why has Kanon, or literally anyone else in the house who knew, looking at you, Shibuya, Narita, because you were there for a conversation about it, why have none of them told Takeru about the Makoto doppelganger thing until now? That's kind of a thing you'd want to mention to people. Like, oh yeah, there's some evil versions of my brother running around trying to murder him. Be careful you don't think one of them is him, because then we could get some Fize-level misunderstandings going on. Which, you know, thank God we haven't, but it's a little late in the show for that. But, you know, maybe a thing you'd want to mention to someone.
Yeah.
Also, Makoto can just call Edith on the phone. This kind of jumps me back to Gokaiger. When, like, there's an episode where they're like, oh, we have to, you know, meet up with Bosco, because I think he, like, took some of their ranger keys and they wanted to fight him. And Ahim's just like, well, let's just call him on the phone and challenge him. And I'm like, why do you have his phone number? Why is that a thing that you're able to do?
All I can think is just Bosco just being like, new phone, who dis?
And I mean, I guess this makes a little more sense because, you know, Makoto's getting stuff from Edith. But it's like, aren't you worried about, like, his calls being monitored by the fascist society that he lives in?
Like, I imagine they don't they don't monitor each other's phones, you know, executive privilege.
I don't know, Adele probably would. It felt a little too easy. It just felt like a real weird moment. Also, how is the, we put people in a box and then put their souls into icons, how is that news? You've had literally four people in this show have their icons broken and then come back in human bodies. Two of them live in your house. How is this news? I thought we had already covered this.
I'll just call that, like, I just say that one's just for the kids. Just in case.
I guess.
This is going to be important, you know, coming up, kids. Just remember this.
You know, Elaine and Makoto are right here. Javert is probably living in the backyard. Also, why did Edith create the Gon Miser? I know that he says it's to prevent unnecessary contact with the Great Eye, but they don't really explain why that would be a problem. Because the only one the Great Eye wants to give power to is Adonis, right? Like, it currently doesn't want to seem to do anything for Adele, and I'm very confused as to what the issue is that led to, like, the Gon Miser even being needed.
I think that's a pretty fair cop, like, I just sort of took it as, like, too much direct contact is bad, question mark? Or maybe it's a failsafe to keep someone from doing what Adele is doing? Because Adonis was like, well, look, I'm perfect, but I might not be that perfect. And then he'd smile, and then there was a little ting.
Yeah, but, like, the entire reason Adele is a problem is because he can use the Gon Miser.
Yeah, I don't.
So why did you build them?
Yeah, it does seem like a pretty bad idea. It's definitely one of those, why do we even have that lever, Kronk, sort of things.
Yeah, like, I could kind of get if, like, anyone could commune with the Great Eye, and they're just like, no, we only want this guy to do it. Because, you know.
Maybe Adele found out, like, it's got, like, some lineage subclause program. I don't even know.
It's just a real weird, I don't understand exactly why those were needed.
Hmm. Well, I mean, the realist answer is, so Takrut has something to fight.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, no, I dig your...
The meta reason concern. Is fine, it's just the context of it is a little bit loose. If someone does have information and would like to clear that up for me, you know, feel free.
Yeah, feel free to, we should just make a separate email account, actuallyrx@gmail.com, so just one-stop shop for all our corrections.
I mean, I don't know if maybe this somehow comes up in, like, 43 or 44, because I haven't watched those yet, but, yeah, a little bit more explanation may be needed.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And we can just skip to the next thing, because I don't really... I was just too busy loving these episodes, so... No nits worth
taken. So it's my turn
yes,
now.
Yes, yes.
Or,
yes.
Well, I only kind of have the one thing, because... one other thing that I nicked from, like, whatever I can find from, like, I don't know, the Kamen Rider subreddit or something... because it's kind of hard to find these, honestly, other than if it's not like, I'll talk about it later maybe, but it's like several episodes into this whole like Makoto Spectre clone subplot, I'm still kind of unclear as to what the deal behind that was. Like, I think Sono, you mentioned like sort of like what it could be or what it is about some episodes back, but I don't know. I don't remember what it was.
I kind of agree with you here because at this point I also really don't know, and it's a little late to be doing this.
Yeah,
it really is.
I'm fine with this plot. Like, in general, I'm fine with them doing this, but they should have done this like 10 episodes ago.
Yeah, and it's really, it's kind of just adding like a unnecessary conflict, or not even, I don't know, well, not even, well, not unnecessary so much as it's conflict that doesn't really make sense to exist as it is. Like, maybe it is necessary if we kind of know what they're trying to do here, but it's giving Makoto something to do, but what does it really say about Makoto? Is this something like a personal deal? Like, is this meant to represent something about Makoto or something? It's like, well, what is this?
It absolutely at this point feels like, okay, so this is just so someone has Makoto, so Makoto has someone to fight.
I know that
Edith keeps going into like, well, this is happening because of Deep Specter, and like he chose to do this. But again, like, this should have started right when he got Deep Specter. He should have had like one or two fights as Deep Specter, and then this starts, and then we can build something out of Makoto with it.
Yeah, it's
where, like, this, the whole nothing is really being gained at this point.
Yeah, they've. I really wonder if this is because, like, who wrote the Deep Specter episode? Like, who introduced it first?
I'm not sure because I don't remember when it happened.
Because I feel like it probably is like the main writer of the show, but then it kind of goes back to like the thing that I was kind of also worrying about this show like a few episodes back, which is that what if Keiichi Hasegawa is just basically like doing like the filler work because the main writer just for whatever reason isn't available to kind of fill in the details.
I don't totally think that's how it works, though.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it works either.
I'm pretty sure the main writer still has to like approve scripts.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and it's just like,
I don't think that the main writer was completely absent from Ghost. I think that period of him not writing episodes was him writing the movie and working on production of the movie. So he would still be there, and he would still be there to approve scripts. I think, like, I don't really think that it's just, Hasegawa being like, okay, well, I've got to fill Makoto's time with something, so I'm just going to throw this in.
Yeah. I don't know. This also probably starts to going down on like just how fundamentally these toku productions go down within, and I think we already touched upon that many times before, but it's like, I don't know, I just have to kind of wonder if there is just some weird like something like fundamental between like the communications not being done here, because it's like I really don't know what they're trying here.
I feel like what it is, and I think, again, going back to Forze, this is absolutely a thing that happened in Forze, and because you can tell by looking at certain bits of it. I feel like this is something that maybe they wanted to do earlier, but couldn't because they had to do other things in order to sell other toys.
Yeah.
And that, there just wasn't time, and this got shoved. Like, in Forze, Gemini is absolutely supposed to happen a lot earlier. If you look at everything that happens with Yuki early in the show, you can tell, like, okay, Yuki being Gemini was always planned, but for some reason, probably because of Meteor, it got pushed off so late that they kind of rushed their way through it. And I think that's probably what happened here, was that, the higher-ups at Toei talking to the higher-ups at Bandai were like, okay, well, this toy is selling better than Deep Specter. Like, Grateful or Mugen are selling better than Deep Specter, so focus on them in the show.
Yeah, and it's also kind of, that whole, when you mentioned Forza, it also kind of relates to how, like, the aforementioned the Gamo thing that I meant, that I said with, how Gamo, we didn't really know about his thing before, like, the last arc of the show.
I don't quite agree with you on that, because I don't feel like we quite needed to know his backstory before then.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. There's some arc.
There was no point when we had been introduced to Gamo and Forze, like, as the leader of the Zodiarts, there was at no point that we didn't know what he was about, even if we didn't understand exactly why he was doing it. There was no point at which Gamo was not the most terrifying person.
Yeah, he's, that's...
We always knew he was ruthless and bloodthirsty.
Okay, yeah, his presentation was good. It's just that, I don't know, wasn't, like, the whole, like, whole flashback about him, like, his motivation from, like, the childhood flashback thing, wasn't that, like, revealed, like, in the very same episode he was defeated in? I feel like it's been so long since I watched Forze, but
the
it's
thing
like
is we do get a lot of the backstory between him and Udahoshi and him and Emoto before that. There's a lot of slow build with Gamo, where I don't think that we needed all of the information on him from very early.
I suppose I probably maybe have to rewatch those episodes to kind of see what it's about, but I don't know. But regardless, yeah, this Makoto D-Specter thing really isn't working out all that well. Yeah. And again, does it have to do with the movies? I still wonder that.
I don't think so. No, I don't think that has anything to do with the movie.
It probably doesn't, but yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's just so weird that we just have this thing going on that's just pretty much completely unrelated to everything else. Just, it's like...
I think it's just something they wanted to do earlier and couldn't.
Now it's
kind of getting the Gemini Pisces treatment where it's just kind of rushed.
So basically, it's either the writer's fault or the production's fault. Either way, it's just not working out.
I'd chalk it up to production. Quite honestly.
Me too. Because Toku Productions kind of are not really the most optimal way to do things, as we probably mentioned a lot of times.
Once or twice.
So yeah, it's definitely that. I hope this gets a sensible enough resolution in, like, the last few episodes, because, God, I really don't get what they're trying to do with this Makoto thing, with this whole Makoto clone thing, yeah.
I get what they're trying to do, they're just not really doing it. Again, because they just don't have the time.
And this is also something I nicked from, like, the community pages, which is, I didn't put too much thought into it, but the question is that, you know, what exactly is kind of the point of even, like, doing the whole Edith Sage sort of subplot to begin with? Like, that's the sort of question that's made here that I think it's kind of interesting to bring up in this podcast.
We're going to be getting to it in depth a little later, but I think my thing is like the short form is I think people are making a much bigger deal of it than the show is, and I think that's a part of the thing, because the show never goes out and says, what is the big deal with Edith and the Sage? They have the same face. Weird! That's all us doing that.
No, I think... I don't know. I think they are doing kind of
like
a deal with it, but it's
it.
Like...
They're like, hey, this is a thing that's going to matter, and this is where it matters.
The thing is, the show really doesn't make a deal of it. It's just, okay, they just show both of them to us, and they're like, okay.
Here,
like,
are two characters.
You know these are played by the same actor, so, you know, consider that. Just keep that in your back pocket. Like, it's just part of the larger plot. I don't think it really is its own subplot.
I think it really is I feel this is kind of, personally, I feel like this is one of those things is that we just kind of have to see what the sort of end game, like the end in the final episodes is going to be, like how this is going to pay off. And then it's kind of easier to kind of reflect on this at that point. So because right now, it's hard to kind of say.
Well, it's the difficulty that you always run into when discussing serialized media as it airs. Doing a close reading of episode by episode and then having to fit those into the context of the larger episodic structure, which fits into the larger meta structure, which then fits into the larger cultural structure. And it's just, you always run into a lot of things because ultimately so much of it just comes down to, well, we have to wait. Okay, and then we fill up time by thinking about it and whatnot.
Mm. And Kamen Rider is especially odd because it's like, it's serialized, but it's also like it has an overarching plot, but it's also like single episode monster of the week, victim of the week. So we kind of have to like balance those aspects out a little bit.
Yeah, and it's
like kind of see like what is this episode telling, and then kind of see what the whole game is, and often that seeing like how the whole end game is kind of difficult in this sort of things. I don't know. I wonder if it's easier back in early Heisei. I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to say because honestly, I came into like Kamen Rider later than I think a lot of other people did. I don't know. So. But then again, I think you guys came in Aleph, you came in like around Forze's time.
Heck, I came in. And, I came in near the end of Wizard.
Oh yeah. So much later.
I came into watching it serialized at Forze, but I had been watching Double while Oz was airing.
That's pretty much the time frame that I came into it as well, and I basically just kind of worked myself backwards from that.
I mean, like, I imagine watching Deno week to week, or Kiva week to week, was an absolute nightmare.
I can imagine that, yeah.
Like, I can understand, like, if someone came to me and be like, I don't like Kiva because I was watching it week to week, and that was impossible, and I'd be like, you know what, that's fine.
Mm-mm.
Just go on with your life. I can't, especially being a Western fan, watching Deno week to week, because there's a whole, like, three to five episodes, that make zero sense if you can't watch the movie.
Yeah, I heard of that, yeah.
It is bad.
Mm. God, imagine what the watching decades week to week was like.
Well, I know that like PTAs started complaining about that, which is why decade is short. I have to imagine watching like Fives week to week was excruciating.
I know for a fact that people were even upset at like Forze when they were watching it week to week. And this is one of those things that people don't really remember anymore, I feel. But I still recall how much there was just a sizable community that just like did not enjoy Forze at all, did not have a good time with it. It's like it's
I
only kind of.
I have zero idea who those people are, except for the people that hated Yuki, because those people were vicious.
They were vicious, disgusting people.
They said some of the most vile things I've ever heard.
I honestly didn't see the worst of it, but it definitely got really. Even the non-offensive stuff got really kind of grating with like the whole how people just
people were vile about Yuki. All of the girls got some pretty bad treatment, but Yuki I think the worst.
I wonder if it has gotten any better. I don't know. I still kind of find it weird how people just kind of I still kind of find weird how, you know, a lot of the fandom kind of have a fascination, let's say, on like the women in Drive, which is like, okay, I guess you're enjoying the show, but it's kind of weird. I don't know. But I'm not getting to that. Basically, yeah, watching Toku serialized as well, for a Western fan, it's kind of one of those things that people don't kind of realize that, yes, it's not always the easiest thing.
It is not. But Speaking of easier things, that's the best transition I got here, guys. I'm sorry. We're going to get on to our whoa-ments and see what we liked with these episodes. I'll read the ones that Amit left us. First, everyone yelling at Sage was great. And it was. He is correct there. Takaru directing all the rage was good and done fairly well. Takaru reaching out to Adel and trying to connect with him during their fight is so beautiful. And it is. Seeing Ryu summon Musashi and seeing them fight together, that's pretty boss. Extra points for the fact that the summoned icons reflect who summoned them and under what system power setup they were using to do it. Takaru insisting that Adel look to the source of his anger is fantastic. That is the prescribed psychological thing to do, and kids need to see that modeled. And finally, Takaru reaching out to Adel and offering to help him and the Ganma meet their goals. I'm with Amit on that. That's gold.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be kind of talking a bit about some of those. But for 41, QB sent them a little card.
Oh, it's so cute.
It's precious. How did he figure out the postal service?
Look, he's smarter than we give him credit for.
Stamps? I know, but people can't see him. Like, how did he get stamps? I want to know. Come on, Toei, stop holding out on me. Give me some net movies about QB and his boyfriend just going around the world. The little conversation between Akari and Takaru is really sweet, and it comes on top of showing us that the two of them and Onari are all really worried about kind of the lack of time they have left, because they have just over 2 weeks. And, you know, I love that Ghost is willing to take these really small, slow moments and let everyone have real people emotions, which is nice. Because, you know, no one's had real people emotions in Kamen Rider for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, speaking of my two favorite children, Onari left food for Akari. Our first shot past the opening is this wide shot across a table of Akari at her computer trying to, you know, crack the monolith, as she does. And right center of the frame, on the table that we're looking over, is the little bamboo box filled with onigiri that Onari has been using to bring food to Javert. It's a real subtle thing, but over the weekend, while I was at Otakon, my ex hasn't watched any of Ghost, and I convinced him to watch a bunch of it with me. And we watched the first 11 episodes. And, you know, taking a look back at who they were and where they are now, I can't get over the absolutely gorgeous friendship that this show has built between Onari and Akari. It's real nice. I love Akari's rage over not being able to help, and I love that her rage summoned Beethoven to her. Ghost keeps placing Akari up against non-science and relating her to non-science, and I think that's really neat, because there doesn't need to be this divide between science and art or science and faith, and I love how they keep using Akari to show that, because Akari is so gung-ho science. And, you know, she was just fierce as heck standing up to Edith. And how deeply she believes in the fact that science is for helping people, science isn't just for science's sake, is just real wonderful. I'm also really into Makoto's very consistent level of rage over Arya being in trouble. Like, he just goes from 0 to 60 and never slows down on it. I think it kind of feeds into Makoto's whole narrative of feeling abandoned by the family that he was supposed to have. In that, you know, he then goes and finds a new family elsewhere. Ryu and Takeru being the parent and sibling that he found on Earth. Arya and Elaine being the parent and sibling that he found in Ganma World. And, like, the notion of his found family is so important to him that the concept of the one singular member of that family that he can't reach being in trouble just completely sets him off.
That's beautiful.
I love it. I really do. Also, this Ganma Miser attacks with a rubber duck, and I can't deal with it. And it became 800% less of a threat to me when I realized that its weapon was multiplying a rubber duck and shooting it at people.
Yeah.
I'm just like, that thing has a duck face. Yeah, okay, you're not a threat to me anymore. And, you know, for 42, starting the episode with Elaine just grabbing the entire cast and noping the heck out was way funnier than it should have been. Like, I know it's like, oh man, we're all gonna die if I don't do this. I'm gonna use this technique to get us out of here. And I'm just like, nah, you just grabbed everyone and ran. Yurisen calling Elaine Takoyaki Boy was adorable. Yurisen being like, Takoyaki Shonen? Yurisen is just so worried about him. Though I am very confused as to, like, Yurisen's subsequent comments of why do your clothes smell like an old lady? Because that old lady would be Fumi. And Elaine, are you washing your clothes?
Look, I don't know that anyone's told him to, but they do. They have retained their whiteness, so I don't know. Mm.
Just, you know, mildly concerned about that. Okay, so Yurisen has been on this whole Edith equals Sage thing the whole time. We get that from you know, a comment that Yurisen makes when he's like, "Dude, you're in the wrong clothes. You're being the wrong person." So, you know, clearly Yurisen has known. And with Edith's connections to the Great Eye, I feel like our theories on Yurisen maybe being kind of directly connected to the Great Eye is not that far off track, maybe. I swear Bloody Rose was in Beethoven's room. There are, like, three violins in there, and they all had to have been in Kiva, because Toei paid for, like, 4 to 5 separate violins in Kiva, and they're not buying new ones. No, I know Toei.
Yeah.
They're not going to spend money. So I'm willing to bet all of those violins had been in Kiva, but the first shot that we get in the icon, there's a violin over Takeru's shoulder, and it's not in focus, so I can't prove this. But, like, when I saw it, I'm like, that's Bloody Rose. Beethoven somehow got Otoya's violin. And like I said, I can't prove it, but you can't convince me that it's not.
I'm not even interested in trying.
Something about I felt like I could kind of see the carving that was up where the tuning handles are. I don't know the proper terms for things on violins, but up near the top of the violin, I felt like it definitely had the shape of the carving of a woman that was up there. Hmm. You know, it just, that was my immediate reaction, to the point where I had to kind of restart the conversation because I missed a couple things. Also, paralleling Edith and Ryu against Adele and Takeru the way that they did was really inspired. That last moment of Adele just smacking Takeru's hand away is so incredibly strong, because they build it up in every way like he's going to give in and let himself be redeemed, and they just yank it out from under us. They really had me going with how long they were building up, like, this is the same fight that Edith experienced with Ryu. And so much of Ghost is about passing on a legacy that, like, you really believe that we're going to feel that same moment again. And it really drives home how deeply Edith was affected by Ryu and how far into madness Adele has fallen.
And yeah, I'm right with you, because, like, that right there is probably the scene that is going down in my memory as one of the illustrations that the folks making Ghost know what they're on about and know what they're trying to do with it. I mean, again, we can argue about whether or not it works, whatever. Like, that scene for me is going to be sticking the way that Kuga and the porcupine Grongi, the big scary one where they put the freaking noise in instead of a soundtrack, and Kuga is just losing his sugar on this dude. Like, that's, like, it's that kind of affecting for me, and it's because they create this space where we can just really hate Adele, because it's not just that he's trying to end the world, he's trying to end the concept of a more humanistic worldview. Like, Ryu and Edith can come together because they both want a better world, and they can communicate what a better world even is to one another, because from the look, they're not so different. They have a desire to make the world a better place and know what that actually means, which is something that generally flies in the face of more fascistic ideologies, because there is no better, there is, we will return the world to the past, which is a fundamentally impossible thing to do. We will destroy everything besides the mechanically necessary, and that will make us happy. Okay, but happiness, anyway, y'all get what I'm saying. Like, Adele doesn't want to make the world a better place, not in a way that Takeru means it. He's entirely solipsistic. The world is not good enough right now, because it does not recognize him as being inherently superior, so he therefore rejects Takeru's messy, shrugging, stumbling kindness and humanity. It's such a good moment, like you said, like when he slaps that hand away, I was just like, oh, wow! It's just a perfect way to show us who Takeru and Adele are as we start heading towards the finale of the show. And, like, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to spin off from there, Cannibal. I'm pretty much done. I just had the one thing I really loved these two episodes, which is kind of short-shrifting everything else, but there you go.
I actually don't have much to say, honestly. I think you guys said all that's really needed to be said. There was one little moment that I really liked, okay, which is that the part where the Makoto clone henshins into Spectre by, you know, stepping from, like, the canyon, like, edge, dropping down, and then within that amount of time, transforms into Spectre and appears. That was pretty
that
cool.
Was
I
hot
that
fire,
was pretty
dude.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a good
yeah,
call.
No, that was some real nice directing.
Yeah, I like it when they kind of do sort of funny things with the henshins, something clever and creative like that.
Go watch Bokenger. Bokenger has some real Bokenger is like one creative henshin after another.
She ain't kidding. Like, nice. They have this little like friction wheel to like
and they
power
have to,
it.
Like,
so they keep finding new things to bounce it off of. Like at one point, someone's shooting a bullet at them, and they're just like, they just hold up the device, and the bullet hits the wheel, makes it spin, and they transform.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of things like that. It's real good stuff.
Man, why isn't that more of a thing?
I know,
Because, like, the original Kamen Rider had that with, like, the wind power initially, but that didn't last very long. And
the thing
so,
is, like, we need to... I think it's because we need to put a gimmick in a belt, and you can only, like... You put a thing in a belt. There's not really a lot of ways to do that.
Yeah, but then the problem is, why does it always have to be the thing in the belt, you know? Yeah.
Because we need to sell those.
Yeah, well, that's the eternal issue with all these sort of things.
Isn't
yeah.
It does, though. Isn't
See,
it
my,
does.
My problem is Sentai could still do it. Because Sentai, you just have an object. So Sentai could get a little more creative with it, and they have not.
Yeah, that.
Though
still though.
There was one time when Joe did put a key into a Mobi Rates with his mouth.
Yeah, God, I remember how...
I'll give Go Kadra that.
God, I remember how weird it was when I watched, like, the first episode of Kamen Rider Drive and thought, wow, they don't put the thing in the belt this time around.
That's because there's a dude's face there.
Yeah, yeah. I think that maybe that's the solution. Put people's faces on the belts from now on.
Kiva had a face. This belt has a face, though. Like, you're putting the eye in the ghost belt.
Yeah, but it should be alive.
Even if the thing is, like, the face could come off the belt. Like, Kivat was an entirely separate character, so him getting onto the belt, or, like, him getting to Wataru so he could do the hand bite and be put onto the belt, could be done differently every time.
True. But, did we have anything else, or should we move along?
Let me think, actually. I think I had something else. No, not okay. Really. Okay, let's go move on.
So, moving on, since we're talking a lot about how things could be, what do you foresee happening in Ghost as we move into our prophecies?
Again, I wrote these 2 weeks ago. So, you know, I feel like this first one is something that gets answered somewhere within the next two episodes that we have yet to cover. So, you know, no one confirm or deny. But, you know, Demi is going to get finished. Screw everything up for everyone. Screw it up for the good guys. Screw it up for Adele. Everything's just going to go horribly wrong. I don't know how, but it's gonna. But then Akari's gonna hack Demia, shut it down, and smack Igor in the face again, and just be the true hero of the series. Because that's what she does.
She's really good at it. Just go on, Cannibal, I'm sorry.
Being the best.
I hope that at some... I hope that when Ghost is over, that Ghost gets all those weird, like, multiple dozens of direct-to-DVD movies that apparently is a thing now.
Yeah, well,
500 guidance.
500 guidance and then like 3 Kamen Rider Chaser movies.
Just make a ton of these for Ghost. Toei owes me.
Yeah, just like you better make an Akari one to counterbalance whatever the hell that Chaser one was about. Damn.
I don't know what happens in the Chaser one. I accept the Chaser one entirely because it gives me Baby Haruna. And that's all I need from life. Also, it gives me confirmation that Toei can still get a hold of Shizuka, which gives me hope for a Boken 10. So I care very little about the rest of the contents of that movie because it does everything for me that I need it to do.
yeah, that's true.
But aside from that, Arya is so tired, you guys. She's so incredibly tired. This poor woman has lost everything. She hasn't even lost everything because she's still in the process. Like, she is watching everything fall out from under her as we speak. Please, everyone, just stop doing completely asinine things for, like, a week and just let her rest. She's so tired.
Oh, that's true. I think for me, just like going like way forward, my current prediction is basically that by the end of the series, we're going to see Sionji again, and he's going to come back as the avatar of the Great Eye, dressed like all in white, and be the proxy voice of God, or you know, whatever we're going to call the Great Eye, who explains that he's come to understand what it is to be kind and human-centric, and is so happy to give Takaru his life back, and then he's going to high-five Ryu and Edith, and go find Igarashi and be like, hey dude, I'm sorry I was such a jerk. And just generally go around apologizing for being such a pile before just being like, okay, I've come to understand the error of my ways. Go forth and suck no more. But yeah, that's my current thing. You have anything you'd like to see in the future, Cannibal?
I don't know. I'm just in for the ride by this point.
I dig that.
I don't know. Maybe some nice ghost, ghost DVD movies that we just mentioned.
Yeah, that would be really
cool. I would like to see the ghost movie, because I heard that one is actually really good.
Oh yeah,
like it looks surprisingly good. I heard it's actually surprisingly really good. So it's like, oh, okay.
I'm still waiting for someone to sub the Kamen Rider 1 movie.
I mean,
someone's
got to
be on.
I mean, if anything, at least we know. At least, if anything, at least Ghost will have great movies.
Yeah.
You know, even if you don't like the show,
it'd
at least you have
one.
Like. Yeah, the Drive Ghost movie was actually pretty solid too.
Nice.
It was actually pretty surprisingly so. It was surprisingly pretty good. I won't say anything. Although it's not. I will say one thing though. It isn't done the same way like the previous movie wars, where you know how it's like they separate this is the. Like, this is the Forza section, and this is the O section, and then at the end they kind of cross over.
That's for the
and
best.
Where it becomes a movie war. Yeah, they don't do that in this movie. And
good.
It's all the better for it, honestly.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this as someone who doesn't like Drive all that much.
I do so feel like we'll probably see Arya's suit again at some point. I don't know if it'll be in the show or a movie. It's just, you know, Toei paid for it.
They better show it. They better show it, because, I mean, damn.
It's great. It was there for, like, a minute, and I can't imagine Toei, like, paying for a whole nother suit and not, you know, using it for more than a minute.
Yeah. God, even Kamen Rider, like, what was it? Not, like, the one that Mayu pensions into.
Yes,
what's it
called?
Mage.
That was the whole plot of the Wizard movie.
Yeah, exactly.
That suit in the Wizard movie.
Yeah. We just kind of...
We got a decent amount of the mage suits once the mages were introduced.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like...
So, like, I can't imagine they won't do something with this suit.
Yeah, so... Because, you know, they use the mage suit so much, like... Why not this suit also? I mean, you made it. Or unless it's like one of those, unless it's like they already had recolored it, you know, to write,
well,
I don't know.
The recolors of it are in Ghost's movie.
The movie came first. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've got those, it's kind of the reverse of what happened with the mages, where Wizard's movie was just the mage suit, and then we get two more. Whereas this, we have the three in the movie, and then we have Arya's.
Yeah.
Again,
they paid
for another one of those suits, so I can't imagine they won't use it again.
Even
if it's just, you know, they do a Necron movie and put Arya in it in that.
Let's hope for that.
Look, I would accept that. I would love to see Arya and her little brother going around beating up bad guys.
Yeah, I mean, The Legend of Elaine was fantastic, so let's get another one.
It had no right to be.
It was honestly the funniest I've ever seen Ryder at in, like, a long time. It was super... It was
some good stuff.
It was so fun. It was hilarious. I loved it.
Okay, but since we're giving our opinions on stuff, we've got some really interesting questions this time around that I think we should get to before we head off on another tangent.
Probably yes.
Yeah, I know us. So first one, since Edith made all the icons, do you think that his groovy black Ultima is a color choice, or is it somehow more powerful than the more common white Ultima suit?
Either way, it looks slick as heck.
True.
I'll give it that. It is nice looking. I'm not sure if we have grounds to call it more powerful at the moment, just because, you know, we haven't seen it against another Ultima. But, you know, Edith is kind of the big top dog scientist among the Ganma, so it's either more powerful, or, you know, some kind of prototype that he then souped up to probably be more powerful. So, you know, either way, I can go either way, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was more powerful.
I admit, like, for me, I just assumed it was just a custom color thing, so that folks who've been around a while know that he's the final Kuga to Ultima's Daguba. I mean, look, there's probably a book or a magazine article from Toei that tells us otherwise and explains that, look, this one is actually, like, you know, it can bench press 1,000 more tons or something like that, but I just like it as a little nerdy nod to what has come before. It makes me feel like these guys are continuing to wear their influences on their sleeve, and I really adore that about them.
Yeah, I like it. I do wonder what the sort of categorization of all these, because I feel like there's clearly some kind of weird class distinction between all these different, like, Ganmas.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even among human forms, I've made a lot, especially now that we know Edith is a scientist, I've made a lot of notes on that. Just on wardrobe colors. Black is soldier, gray is scientist, white is royalty. Where actually Adonis and Arya are the only ones who have ever been in completely white. So we've got kind of, even though we've had Adele in white and black, and then Elaine in mostly black, even though they're both, you know, in the royal family, they act more primarily as soldiers. So there is kind of a very, like, linearly designated class system among the Ganma.
And also the different, like you got, like, first you got, like, the foot soldier Ganmas, who are, like, just the featureless guys in, like, the black hoodies. And then you got, like, the sort of, like, elite soldiers, which is basically, like, what Javert turns into, and then what kind of, like, and then kind of what Igor turns into, but kind of Igor turns into, like, a special version of that, where he's got, like, the ghost hoodie and can transform into a different, like, ghost rider.
Yeah. Even among, like, non-human ones, you've got the faceless ones, then you've got the ones with the face that can be upgraded, like, with an item something like QB. I think it's just different classes have access to different things.
Mm. The elite are the sort of guys who get, like, either the Ultima or, like, a driver. If you're, like, royalty or, like, Makoto, get the driver.
Like, well, like, royalty basically gets a driver, and you can count Makoto as royalty if you kind of continue to look at him and canon as regarded as Arya's children.
Sort of adopted into the family.
They're basically Arya's children. So where, like, royalty gets drivers, and then Igor gets the proto-driver because he can do whatever he wants. He acts like he can do whatever he wants.
If nothing else, he's got the keys to the warehouse.
But then, like, he's got, like, Superior and Ultima, where, like, you can get promoted from Superior to Ultima. Kind of in the way that Javert did. But there's a very linear class system that goes along in the Ganma.
I wish someone draws, like, a chart of this, because, I don't know, I feel this is kind of cool.
I'm willing to compile the information and kind of make one.
Because I really like these designs, so I really wish that, because there's clearly some thought put into this, like, how it all kind of relates, so I really wish that.
I would love to see, kind of in the way that there was the Zodiarts concept book, I'd love to see, like, a Ganma concept book. Kind of detailed all of that.
I'm sure the artist is going to release that at some point soon.
I don't know if there's been one since Forze, though.
No, I think Drive had. No, I know that Drive and Gaim did have one.
Well, I know there's the, like, Detail of Heroes books. I don't know if that has any of, like, the monster stuff in it.
I know that I've seen at least, like, I've seen at least a book that contains all the different monster artworks for Gaim and Drive, so I think
Were they specific books, like, on their own, like the Wish Upon a Star book?
That I'm actually not sure of. I've only seen the pages. I have to recheck.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure if that stuff is in, like, Detail of Heroes.
Hmm.
Because I probably should have looked through the Detail of Heroes books better over the last weekend when I had some access to them.
Mm, those are really good. Those are really cool.
They're real nice. I looked at some of the suit stuff in them, but I didn't want to look through the whole book and then not buy it.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to be that person. I just flipped through it.
Mm. I get. But yeah, they're definitely really nice. While we are at talking about suits, one quick thing about the movie, the Kamen Rider Extremer. I think have you seen that guy?
No.
He's from the movie. He shows up in like the previews prominently.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you mind? Have you seen it? I don't know.
You didn't tell me things about the movies, so
it's not that big of a spoiler because it's literally in the trailers. Literally in the trailer, but I won't say anything. I won't say anything.
You underestimate my spoiler tolerance.
Okay. Well, I won't say anything further then.
All right, then. Let's move on to our second question. Oh, wait. First, I believe this is Amit's comment about the black and white Ultima suits. I like to think that the black suit is a more powerful model made afterwards, because he's got to be prepared for stupid kids making a mess of things. I'm looking at you, Adele. That's right. Which I think is something we can definitely get our heads around.
I do like the concept of everyone, like, years ago being aware, like, okay, we gotta keep an eye on Adele, because he's gonna do something stupid if we leave him unsupervised.
Yeah.
And then we left him unsupervised, and look what happened.
Well, they didn't really leave him as much as he made himself unsupervised.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's people watching over him and tell him not to do stuff, he just keeps murdering them.
Yeah.
Arya's
trying.
Yeah, she is. She's put on
valiant effort. She's so tired, though.
Now, speaking of Adele, do we think we'll ever see Adele's toys that all popped out at once at the end of 41 and that Takeru systematically destroys in 42, the weapons that sort of appear out of nowhere and are implicitly gone misers that I guess they just didn't feel like making suits for?
Yeah, because they definitely are Gon Misers, and I think that's actually pretty neat, having Adele utilizing the Gon Miser the same way that Takeru is utilizing Heroic Icons, since they're sort of the counterforce for each other. And I feel like I should be bothered that Takeru is just striking Gon Miser down left and right, like, in this one fight, because he destroys, like, five of them in 42 alone. But the Gon Miser are meant to specifically not have personalities. My main thing was like, oh man, all of the horoscopes in Forze were really rushed. But those were actual people that we were supposed to explore and then didn't. None of these they're not supposed to be people. They're supposed to be machines. And Adele sees them as tools and machines. And, you know, Takeru is cutting them out while talking about how strong and wonderful his friends are. And that really drives home the difference between, you know, Takeru and Adele and the Gon Miser and the Heroic Icons. I do think that we may see them again, though. Again, because I can't imagine Toei spending money on making these weapons for them to only be on screen for half a second.
Yeah. On the other hand, like, They might just be, like, throwaway designs that just got computer animated, and who knows? it'll be fun. Anyway, to take that idea and run with it, I just like that it's also letting them save themselves some time, narratively speaking, to just like, oh, well, here's some faceless gone misers. They don't even have bodies. He just takes them out. We're done. Just because it also allows them to reiterate the big differences between Adele and Takaru's whole approach to things. Adele wants things he can control and pulls them into himself to enforce his will over them so that he can just use them as he sees fit. While Takaru wants this big, weird, primordial soup of potential, so he brings his friends together and they join hands. And, like, sure, that results in a pretty similar-looking visual, but the framing is so different. I really adore it. And then Amit added, I actually do think these will be a flash in the pan. They did use a few of them in both episodes, and maybe they're hoping to make up the money in a SH Figure Arts release of Rosebud Adele, but which would be a Bandai exclusive, of course, with all these little bits in one package. If they're smart, they'll pose him fighting Mugen with the gadget weapons Ghost has.
Like, I could see them being a flash in the pan for the show, and then maybe, like, having someone summon them in movies.
Yeah, but...
And everyone being like, whoa!
That's a deep cut.
But I could see that. And I'd be fine with it if that were the case.
Yeah. And anything on your end, Cannibal? Or should we just move on?
I got nothing. Okay. Let's move on.
Then we get to the next question. Does the fact that Adonis actually was chosen by the Great Eye take away from Elaine blindly following in his blindly believing in his perfect father and the fascist regime they had going before he joined Takaru and the others? Which is to say, okay, his dad said he had divine right. Turns out God agreed. What do we make of it?
I honestly think that only adds to it. Like, his father and his father's ideals were chosen by quote-unquote God, and because God says they're right, that makes them right. What better reason could this dumb kid have to blindly believe in this than, well, God says I'm right, so I must be right. I mean, even Arya, who she has never been shown to have any malicious intent or wanting to harm anyone, completely just followed this idea without any questions, because it's like, well, God says so. And, you know, Adele has just kind of taken that to an extreme, moving beyond why he believed in it to begin with, and kind of losing those reasons when he's faced with all of the reasons, like, hey, maybe we weren't quite right. And Adele has begun to break down on that. And as much as he's a foil for Takeru, there's really some underlying foiling for Elaine as well. And as Adele is breaking down and clinging to an ideal that can no longer support itself, Elaine is growing stronger by shaking off that flawed system and coming into himself.
Yeah, I really...
And his own ideals.
Yeah, he's figuring himself out, and it's great, because... And okay, like, here's the thing. Like, if you stop and think about it, churches, which is to say, at least by their own estimation, the representatives of the divine here on Earth, tend to back up whoever the king is. Like, they agree that he's got the divine right, fight, 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 and then he says he's their servant, protects their consumer base against competing interests, everybody wins. So, like, the fact that in this instance it's not a capricious mortal institution, but a capricious, vaguely defined demiurge... Like you're saying, Sono, it doesn't really take anything away from the fact that Elaine's belief was blind and uncritical. And that doesn't take away from the fact that Elaine comes around to be this awkward dude that we've come to appreciate, if not love. It's just one of the things I really love that the show is working with. Like, however imperfect the execution is sometimes, is just trying to help the kids at home put their parents and their imperfections into context and help them get to a place where they can both understand and, I mean, at least ideally, criticize the things their parents say and do. And I really like that. I mean, they might not be great at the criticism part on this show, and goodness knows we've spilled some kilobytes on that, but maybe there's only so much you can ask a developing mind to do at a time or something. I don't know, but anyway, it's just kind of neat to go to the thing where Papa actually turning out to have been kind of perfect is still better because his perfection did not prevent him from raising one of his kids to be a vicious power bad pile of crap who's threatening the existence of two worlds. So even if God likes him, like, how perfect is he really?
It's true.
Just saying. Amit adds, like, that he also doesn't think it takes anything away. Quote, I think it actually goes a long way to show just how careful we all need to be about good intentions and that we need to keep checking ourselves so that we don't drift off to a place we don't want to be. If we have others to help keep us in check, that's even better. But I worry that Adonis just went all reclusive after Argos and Athena, which is what he's guessing is Ghost Mom's name, died.
I gotta say, if her name ends up not being Athena, I'm going to be real disappointed, because that would be great. Like, there's some real great, just in that name,
Adonis,
and,
Athena,
you know, who the actual, yeah. Like, come on, Toei, you've got that there. But I definitely, I'm in with that. Because it really was, you know, the two of them dying that set off whatever it was that led everything to collapse.
Yeah, that's just... and Cannibal, did you have any thoughts on that one, or...?
No. Neither do I have thoughts on this one, either, okay. Actually.
I'm real sorry, bro. Then we'll move on to the next question, which is... At the end of 41, when Adel tried to kill all of Takaru's friends, do you think he was trying to make them more equal? They've both got these infinite forms, and besides that, they're very much written as foils. Do you think Adel feels that and acted upon it?
I definitely think Adel does kind of realize that they're foils for each other, and kind of sees Takaru as what to him is a flawed version of himself that he has to conquer and destroy, because again, Tenkuji Takaru is the key. So, you know, you gotta get rid of that to get, so he can get to where he wants to go. And again, take this with the fact that I've yet to watch 33 and 34, so I could either be totally off base or 100% right, and, you know, I'd prefer not to know either way at the moment. But I think this becomes even more pronounced at the end of 42, when Adel smacks Takaru's hand away and admits that he himself was quote-unquote wrong, and then denies Takaru's redemption, goes back to Ganma World, and, you know, pseudo-kills himself to return to a human body. I think he's realized that there's something to this human potential thing, and that it's a power that surpasses what he already has, since he can't connect with the Great Eye. And, you know, by returning to his human body, I think he wants to possibly try to use the Ganmizer to somehow grab onto that same human potential that Takaru has achieved and get to the Great Eye through that. And if that's what he's after, I can't wait to see that blow up in his stupid face.
Yeah, I'm right with you there. Although I will say, like, for all I dig on a lot of the whole, like, noble opposition thing, like, I'm going to be the naysayer on this one, because I just think he's just a vicious, monstrous, mechanical, fascist, social Darwinist logic bro. So he's just figured out Takaru's thing. Takaru loves his friends and depends on them. Killing them diminishes Takaru's potential, and thus his power, since power is absolutely a zero-sum thing that is in no way complicated or entirely self-justifying. So he's going after him, after all of Takaru's friends, because of the old thing where, your friends make you weak! I am so strong, I have nobody and nothing, blah! Then look, I mean, I get the perspective, like, where all that matters is martial power and every part of life that is not defined by violence or domination is considered superfluous. Like, and by that metric, he's right. But the whole point of the show is, of course, that Takaru and the rest of Team Ghost are rejecting that worldview in its entirety, and they are correct to do so.
Yeah. No, I definitely think all of that is also right.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, again, I'm not
like,
saying...
on top of... No, like, I'm not saying that you're rejected, but I definitely think, like, that is also part of it.
Yeah. And then Ahmed...
Because Adele is a bullet.
Yeah, he's... Well, I mean, he is the perfect fascist, and I do love that they just... They play him that way. And then Ahmed adds, I'm not sure about this. Like, he wants the missing piece that Takaru has. Maybe he thinks that short of defeating Takaru, if he kills all his friends, Takaru will lose his ability to access the Great Eye, and therefore no one will be able to do it forever, nanner nanner poo poo, which would be a petty and childish victory for him. That one seems likely to me, but this one is an idea I can't quite shake, even though I know it's a stretch. Maybe Adele thinks that making himself and Takaru more alike will somehow lower the threshold and allow him to access the Great Eye, which I kind of like that.
That's a curious thought.
Yeah, it's the, I get all shades of Prince of Darkness here. And now it's moving on. Is the truth about Sage coming too late in the series?
Maybe for some, but I'm not all that displeased by it. It may have come across a little stronger if we didn't have all of these gaps of him not being around for a while. But, you know, this, in the moment, I feel like this was actually a really strong way to bring in this reveal. Because there's something real beautiful in everyone just screaming at Edith. Like, Takaru kind of says it himself. Everyone feels this rage because they love Takaru. They want him to be saved. And this is someone who could have saved him and didn't. Like, even Kanon and Shibuya and Narita, who have been mostly passive in the series, are furious. And we focus in on them joining in the yelling. And then Takaru's response to all of this is just more love. Love for his friends, for worrying about him, love for Sage, for doing all of this for him and guiding him in his father's place. And Sage, who responded to everyone's anger with like, yeah, I'm awful, and I did terrible things, and I deserve all of you hating me. He responds to Takaru's love by being completely overwhelmed by it. And that's acted so beautifully.
Yeah, it really is.
On, you know, the part of his actor, his face in those two moments, like he is just absolutely on point. And I know that he's more of a well-established actor than most of the cast. So I'm not surprised that he can pull that off, especially having seen him act before in another show. But he's absolutely, like, beautifully overwhelmed by Takaru's compassion. And just everyone in the room feels it, and the rage is just gone. And that's when we have Akari step in, and Akari, who's been Edith's biggest opponents, kind of in that argument and in the last couple of episodes, just stepping in to propose, like, hey, man, I know what you're about now, and you made some mistakes, but we're all in this together, so let's do this. And that just melted my dang heart. Like, all Takaru has to do is smile, and all the tension in the room is gone. Even in the end, he believes in Adele, who is literally just standing there trying to kill him unapologetically with, like, no open hope of redemption. This kid is all love. And look, I'm so glad that Sage is an evil Sagara 2.0. Because, I've been saying for 40-some-odd weeks that I cannot and will not handle dealing with that again. And Ghost did right by me on that, and I'm grateful for it.
I really like how it also almost feels like a kind of an open rejection on, like, the DJ Sagara thing. Too, it's like, yeah, we are just gonna, it's like basically completely calling out how horrible that is.
Like, look, I don't even fully understand the context of Sagara being literally Satan, because I left the show, before that really started being a thing. So I can't.
It's super weird.
I know it's super weird, but I can't comment on how Gaim did it because I haven't seen it. But, like, look, the Bono thing, like, the White Wizard thing, like, I just. Let it go. It's time for us to not do that again. And I'm glad we're not doing that again.
I'm saying this from the perspective because at the end, you probably don't mind if we spoil, like, Gaim,
right? I know most of what happens. I know most of what happens at the end of Gaim, so.
Okay. Okay, but the problem with, like, Gaim was, like, how essentially everyone's just fine with how Sagara basically just manipulated everyone and screwed over the entire planet, and everyone in it. So it's like, but no, it's everyone's fine. And so it's kind of nice that in this episode, it's like, no, screw that. No,
we're gonna get mad
this
about it.
This is not fine.
Everyone in Gaim is surprisingly okay with, like, everything that happens in Gaim.
Yeah, it's weird.
Which but is then a lot again, of my problem with it. But you know, it's just
everyone on Gaim operated on.
There was like 40 some odd weeks of people being like, "Oh, well, Sage is gonna be evil," and I'm like, I really. Don't want that. I really can't handle going through that again. And I'm just, I'm glad that we didn't.
Well, I think...
And that he just responds to, like, he accepts that he did a terrible thing, and then he's just grateful to be forgiven.
Well, I think that's one of the things I've really enjoyed about Ghost, just overall, is that it does seem really intent on fixing a lot of those sort of bad perception writing things that have been going on in the past couple years in some shows that we've already named a couple times, and we'll probably do so again, because Gaim and Drive are trash.
You know,
go on.
I almost feel like, no, it's just something that I've been, like, one thought that I've been toying with. It's like when I looked at, like, Argos was, you know, the dark ghost or the main villain from, like, the Ghost movie, and thought, wow, he kind of looks like, he kind of looks like what Coda became at the end of Gaim into that weird demigod thing.
That's a good call.
I have been assuming it's the same wig.
Yeah, they just took the product out.
Now I'm just imagining this ghost movie that's all about, like, hey, you know, Gokota becoming, like, a weird space god thing and forgiving Sagara and all that sort of nonsense in Gaim. And it's like, yeah, that's not a good thing. He would become a villain by then. And then it's like, yeah, so let's have Ghost fight that god. Let's have Ghost fight
I don't know a lot of the context of things in Gaim. I just know what happens. But, like, I don't even think the concept of, like, Kota becoming a god has to be awful.
No, it doesn't.
But I'm positive that Gaim did it in an awful way.
It was awful. It was very awful.
They kept trying.
Like, I don't even think, like, him forgiving Sagara has to be awful. Like, I think all of that could be done well. It's just that Urobuchi can't write people being happy. And, like,
he cannot write people being... I don't think he can write human beings.
He can't write a good ending.
I'm not even convinced he can really write human beings, honestly. Because, I mean, how many people in Gaim actually acted like human beings?
Well, I think a lot of them acted. Look, I always thought Michi felt very, like, very, you know, there was a lot of truth there, but it was not a truth that
to admit. Michi is very human. Michi is very human. He's just the worst type of human.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the one guy, and then it's like, it's either that, or like, we got...
The thing is, it's not that people in Gaim didn't feel human. It's just that they were all terrible people because Urobuchi hates people. He just hates human beings. He refuses to let human beings be happy. That's a thing.
I don't know. I feel like it also because, I mean, there's no excuse to whatever the hell Kaito was supposed to be, because I feel like even the people who like Gaim don't know what the hell Kaito is. Like, what is his character? What's his motivation? We don't know. The show doesn't know.
Kaito's whole motivation is the episode of Steven Universe, Coach Steven. Like, if you just take the song Strong in the Real Way, and, like, just imagine someone singing that to Kaito, and that's his whole character, is him needing that song sung at him. Or, like, him being Steven in that song.
Oh my
god. That makes
Kaito almost seem consistent with it, because there's a consistency Steven.
There's no consistency in Kaito, but, like, the thing is just, like, I know, like, Urobuchi wrote Fate Zero, and then he went on to go write something in Fate Grand Order. And while he's writing in something in Fate Grand Order, the original author of Fate Stay Night goes up to him and is just like, Urobuchi, can't you write a happy ending? Can't you believe in the happiness of people?
Oh, man.
And I'm just like, man, Nasu. I believe Nasu is the writer. That sounds correct.
Yeah, I think it is. It's him. I think it's him, too. I know it was Nasu that said it to him.
I don't know enough about Fate to be like, yeah, Nasu was the writer. He may be someone else, but I believe he's the writer. I just don't want to, you know, I need to cover myself on that.
Yeah, but getting back to our question, For all I had my fun having my theories about Sage and Edith, remember, I was one of the, there's actually many of them, people. I was wrong. No shame in it. They found the perfect time to reveal it, like you said, Sona. I mean, sure, the sitcom Mrs. Doubtfire reveal was sort of clunky in the moment, but it did lead to this glorious exploration of, like, accountability and redemption that just could not have hit anywhere near as hard at an earlier point in the series. Like, showing Sage being concerned and thinking and talking to Ryu got a bit rough in places, but it also did the thing where they seem to be letting us know that this is a reveal that they're going to do, but they're just waiting until it has the maximum effect, and one that reads like they trusted themselves to pull it off and trusted the audience not to forget about it, and they were also right to do so, which is the thing with trusting yourself and your audience. Sometimes people do it, and they maybe shouldn't. But I think it all sort of comes down to how the whole question of what's Sage's deal wasn't really a central narrative question. Like, it's a bit of flavor. It's a little bit of long game stuff. It's a little thing they kept seeding, but it's not a thing they jumped up and screamed, hey guys, this is interesting, isn't it? Aren't you curious? You're so curious. Better watch next week to find out if we tell you whether or not they're the same guy or two guys. You don't know. Well, maybe we'll tell you, maybe we won't. We're so freaking coy. Instead, they just did this thing where they'd show Edith doing his thing, and they'd show you Sage doing his thing, and then they just sort of left it out there, and I liked that. And then Ahmed comes in to say, I really want to rail against this, but I'm happy about it. So I can't really say yes to the idea that it was coming too late in the series. It feels right. I find it more interesting that Urasen is in on it too, which makes me wonder. And that's a very good point, but I'm pretty sure Urasen is gone.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Urasen is either the Great Eye or is, like, an emissary of the Great Eye in like the way that Inari had like the foxes to go do things for her.
I wouldn't mind if Yudrasin was just turned out to be like, just there is no explanation to it. It's just some weird gremlin that's just like there.
That would also be fine if Yudrasin is just somehow like Sage's weird little familiar. But I mean, there's also just the fact that Yudrasin is an eye. He's just a floating eyeball.
And
God is a big eye in the ceiling. Like, the ethereal ceiling. I feel like there's gotta be some kind of connection there.
And then our final question of the evening. Was there a voice besides Akari's calling for Takaru to wake up?
There was. And we've heard that voice once before. We keep hinting at this, and what I assume is Takaru's mom, because I can't imagine who the heck else that could be. Like, what other random disembodied female voice that belongs to no one we've met would be talking to Takeru specifically, and only Takeru?
And only doing so as a disembodied voice.
Yeah, in like these moments of real high emotion for him. Like, when are we gonna commit to this and, you know, do something with his mom? Stop freaking holding out on me, Toei. I need the mom plots.
I do have to question if it really is Takaru's mom that bringing it now when you haven't mentioned her at all prior, kinda, I don't know, little...
Well, the thing is, we did have this voice talk to him a handful of episodes ago.
I know, but on the other hand, I don't know, I get the same vibes I did when they were... I'm sure...
It could be tons of people. There are billions of people on the planet. But it just wouldn't make narrative
sense. I'm sure it is. Yeah, I mean, it is Takaru's mom. I mean, I have no doubt it is, but it's like... I don't know, I feel like the way they're building up just kind of reminds me of the way how they build up, like, the guy in Gaim, Kota, is not becoming human anymore. How do they foreshadow this? That he doesn't order as much stuff in the juice bar anymore.
I always kind of thought that was really clever.
That is
one weird thing in Gaim that I always thought was actually kind of neat.
I'm of two minds about it. Yeah, it's like, it's kind of clever, but it's also like, I don't know, I feel like it kind of needs something more to support it also. But then again, I guess there's also
your foreshadowing doesn't need to hit you over the head is a thing.
Yeah, that's true. But
I mean,
still,
I agree that they hear this voice like more than once before. But like, I don't think they need to bring up him like mourning his mother because he clearly lost his mother when he was very young, because she's not around when we see him with Ryu. So his mother isn't really a force in his life.
I don't know. I think they could have like sneaking at least one or two lines of dialogue that's like, oh no, I never knew my mom or something like that. I don't know. I think that would have been fine.
I don't really think it's necessary.
Whatever. I'm just kind of spitballing things right now.
This is more on the Gaim thing, but, like, in a visual medium, you can do things visually instead of having people say things. And, like, with this, you have these moments where he hears this voice. You don't need to have him talking about his mom, again, when his mom isn't relevant to anything that's happening.
Yeah, I just, I don't know, for my own part, I just think it's interesting to note that they really do seem like holding things back. But it, in this case, as with Sagra, like, it kind of works for me, or at least the way they do it doesn't not work for me. Like, they put it in, make it clear that it's a revelation that's gonna happen and be, like, consequential to the characters, if not to the whole mechanics of the plot, and then just sort of trusted themselves to make it go again. I don't know, they just seem to be like, okay, well, here's the thing. It's interesting to you or it's not, and we're not gonna harp on it. If you don't care, it'll be over soon. Which... I do care, though, so I'm actually really excited. Because, yeah, I want to see what happens when Takaru meets his mom, because it feels like a nice little bit of meta-commentary, if nothing else, at how few Kamen Riders have moms. She is the Ghost Kamen Rider mom.
I think it's pretty interesting. The first time Takaru's 99 days were up, it was his father that saved him.
Mm-hmm.
And Takaru's 99 days are almost up again.
That's a very good point.
And, like, we don't know, because Ryu was in that kind of liminal space where Takaru went when he died and where he found Sage. We don't know. Maybe his mom is there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe his mom is kind of there waiting to do her part.
You know, I just... came up with an idea right now, like in for like what maybe happens in the finale, like, cause we've been kind of doing this whole like Takaru, will he come back to life, will he remain a ghost, will he like go to the whatever afterlife that's waiting for him or whatever. It's like, okay, like what if at the end what happens is that he doesn't actually like. He doesn't actually come back to life, but he doesn't go away either. What if he becomes essentially like the next guardian for the Great Eye, you know? Mm-hmm. Like kind of become like what the Ganmisers were. Like I feel that's kind of what they're aiming at. Like he won't be like he becomes essentially this sort of spirit himself. Like he becomes the Kamen Rider that guards. The supernatural, the god world realm,
I'd be okay with that, but I can't imagine them taking him away from everyone else.
Well, that way they wouldn't have to.
No, he won't be like. No, they won't have to. He won't have to be like gone from everyone else. He's just, but that's just like kind of the state
he'd have to be in now. He'd have to be where the Great Eye is.
Well, the Great Eye.
That's for the movie. That's
but yeah.
Well, then again, that's for the movie war to resolve.
Notion,
I guess.
Like, my immediate feeling with that is that it separates him from everyone else in his life, and I can't imagine the show doing that.
Hmm. I feel like they could write a. They could write themselves around that I think that if they just resurrect him, he won't be like ghost, Kamen Rider ghost anymore, because he won't kind of be that anymore.
They just can't let a character just stop.
Well, I mean, he's got to do things in some movies, but they could also write their way around that.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, you. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Like, the icons like you, so you can do this anyway.
Yeah.
Even though you're not dead.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, they found a way to ride around Blade and Gaim, even though by the end of Blade and Gaim, they're absolutely not really in a position where they can... Well, then again, with Blade,
it doesn't really stop anyone... Like, maybe except Kenzaki.
Okay,
Blade, as long as they still have the belt and the cards, they can do pretty much whatever they want.
Yeah, I guess as long as he doesn't meet Joker, it's all fine, I guess. Yeah. No, yeah, okay.
It's as long as they don't fight. It's as long as they don't beat each other.
Yeah, that is true, too.
Because I know in some, like, post-series medias, they do meet very briefly, like, over time. I think they're allowed to meet once a year, is what I've been told. Or, like, they allow, like, Kenzaki allows himself to, like, meet with Hajime once a year. Because the thing is, as long as they're both unsealed, the battle fight isn't over.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a... Man, Blade had a really cool ending.
Yeah, it did.
Blade has the best ending.
Yeah, that... It was so nice. It was so nice.
Oh, and...
But yeah. So...
Into this, I just wanted to toss Amit's comments, if that's alright.
Sure, sure.
This is the same voice that thanked Takaru before, right? If that's the case, it makes me wonder if she's really Ganmom. It'd be bizarre if Takaru's mom and Ganmom ended up being the same person, right?
That is the last thing I want. It was the second to last thing that I want, but we've now gotten Sage out of the way, and I want... That is, like, 0% what I want is for them to basically pull a Bleach.
That would be so weird. Such a weird twist.
It would be a really weird 11th hour thing. I don't know why this would be, like Adele's... Or, like, Elaine and Arya and Adele's mom, though. Like, why would she be thanking Takaru?
Well, she saved one of her kids, why? I guess.
It's... Well, like, then, if that's the case, you would wonder why.
That makes it kind of really weird, and I don't think the other scene had anything to do with Elaine.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just spitballing.
It just feels real odd for that to be like Elaine's mom. Unless they're the same person, but then I don't know why she wouldn't like Elaine wouldn't also hear her sometimes.
Mm. Or why wasn't she thanking Takaru before when, you know, Elaine was, like, converted back to the good side, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I don't know why it would be her. I would like another movie about her, since we're getting one, you know, about Argos.
Hmm.
Make it that Necron movie I was talking about. Just, you know... Elaine and Arya go on an adventure to get some closure about their dead mom.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be down with this.
Mm. Yeah. Let's hope Ghost gets all the movies.
I would be okay with
that. Give it as many movies as Deno.
Yes. Yes. Let's frustrate all... Let's make all the haters angry. Just piss them off. Well, it's like 2025, and we still have Ghost movies.
Look, in fairness, like,
we have like 50 Gaim Gaim.
Yeah, exactly.
I've earned this.
Yeah, yeah. Were they even good? I don't think they were.
I don't know because I literally just I have the word Gaim muted, so that I just don't have to ever deal with Gaim because it makes me mad.
Nobody I follow really like Gaim either, or really watch the Gaim like director DVD movie. So even I don't know.
No, I know people that liked Gaim and watched them. I just don't know how they are because I try to keep Gaim as much out of my life as I can.
But yeah. I think that's enough for us.
Yeah, I think so.
That's pretty much where we're at.
Yeah. So then, for the Uncommon Cast RX and the TOR Network, I'm Aleph.
I'm Cannibal Saracenian, who still cannot believe that Gamera got cancelled. Damn.
And I'm Sono.
And we'll see you next time, hopefully with some better news about Gamera.
Bye-bye.